Megs, count to five.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
We're visiting with Magnus Ostheim at his home in Plentywood. Magnus served in the legislature from when?
1959 for four terms.
For four terms, 1959 to 1966, I guess. And he also was a delegate to the State Constitutional Convention.
Yes, sir.
And was also active, I believe, in the Farmers Union.
Oh, I was active, sir, but not as active as I should have been, maybe.
Okay.
But I supported the Farmers Union.
Well, tell me a little bit about what got you interested in politics.
Well, I taught school for 13 years, and I went into farming, and in the Sheridan County, and right away I got dragged into politics. I became the chairman of the Democratic Party, and that was the beginning.
And about when would that have been?
Oh, about 1956. About that time,
okay.
or 56. Okay, I got started in as being a chairman, and then there was a vacancy for the representative. So whether I got the idea or someone else got the idea, I don't recall. But I went. Now understand. Now in the middle of the 50s, this was a predominantly Democratic county, and I went into feeling quite confident I'd have very little difficulty. And I went in and I won quite handily the first year. So I went into the legislature. Now, you didn't want to hear about that, did you?
I do, yeah.
Well, I didn't spend much money campaigning, I think $100. That's all I spent. Times were different, weren't they?
Amazing now.
Yeah. Sure. Well, I didn't do much advertising. I did some campaigning, but anyway, I won handily. So, but you know, we're 500 miles from Helena. So I had to leave someone at the farm, and my wife and my kids were going to high school. And one of them was on the basketball team. I hated to leave, but I had to go. And I didn't come back here for any games. I stayed right in Helena. I wanted to come back, but I didn't go. It wasn't, I felt I had to be there. So, now do you want me to talk about that first session of the legislature?
Yes, please.
Well, I was a greenhorn, pure and simple greenhorn. I got in there. And the Republicans, we had won. The Republicans had the year before, and we won. The Democratic Party had won.
And we were a majority of Democrats.
We were in both the House and the Senate. So we were faced with raising money. And there was a foursome in Billings. They're very aggressive antagonists. And they gave us a bad time. They said we couldn't even get paid the first time because there wasn't any money. And someone else said, oh yes, we can't stop. You gotta pay the legislators because they have a constitutional right to be here. They gotta be paid. So that was settled, but it was we had a Republican governor, Aronson. Well, speaking critically, he was as rough as a rock. But he was well received by the public. I sort of gave him a bad time when I should not have. I think I was learning from the opposition that giving the opposition a bad time was the thing to do, and it was a very bad situation. Very bad situation. They were antagonistic. They had a very influential state chairman.
The Republicans did?
Oh, yeah.
Who was that?
Fellow from Poplar, if I get what his name was. Okay. But he was on the radio every day.
Mel Ingalls?
Huh?
Was it Mel Ingalls?
Well, I don't think so. That sounds familiar, but I don't think it was. Okay. Anyway, he was on the radio every day giving us a bad time. And we had to raise money. So we taxed everything there was. And you know by now you don't do that in politics. If we had said, here, let's raise the income tax 1% and take care of it, that would have been simpler. But we didn't do that. We taxed everything we could, from baby boots to a bottle of beer. And one lobbyist said to me, he says, well, crime is you, you're not going to tax the poor man's drink. But so it went. And I think it was that year we had... No, that was next year. We were floundering to find sources of money, and we just kept on picking up tax here and here, which, you know, is not the way to go. We were green. And that's the simplest thing I can say so far. I didn't introduce but one bill in that first session because there was nothing that I particularly wanted to do. But the livestock people said, we need a diagnostic center for livestock. So they came over to me and said, we want you to introduce this bill. So I did, and I went through like, you wouldn't guess how easily it went. Even the Republicans said, we needed that. So they set up a diagnostic laboratory. And that was the only thing I did except vote.
Now, Meggs, you mentioned that you said some things that were critical of Aaronson.
What?
Governor Aaronson? You said you were critical of him?
Well...
What happened there?
He was a little bit crude. He had a Norwegian brogue.
Yeah, right.
Like we said, he had a talk, and he said, I drove to Montana, I yumped off the train at such and such a place, and I started my story. And the sort of his personality appeals to the people, and we should have been more careful in our criticism. But it seemed like criticism was the way of life in the Brennan legislature.
Well, what did you say about him?
Oh, I don't remember.
Oh, okay, all right. You just remember that you were critical of him.
I didn't make it a big deal, but just I don't recall. We just felt that we didn't feel he was a governor material.
I see.
He was a rank and file individual, mud in his boots and that time wearing overalls.
Sort of a common man kind of a guy.
A very common man, yes. Yeah. Individually, fine. You liked him. But you kind of wondered if he was capable of being a governor.
Now, Ted Schwinden was a state legislator in that first session in 59, too, wasn't he?
Who?
Ted Schwinden. Ted Schwinden went on to become governor?
Yeah. I can't remember if Ted Schwinden was in the legislature then. He probably was. If I had my book here, I could tell you.
Yeah, I think he was in 59 and 61.
Okay.
So you remained in the legislature. You were reelected in 1960.
I was reelected three terms.
Now, Meggs, do you remember a bill in the 59 session that would have created public utility districts?
Oh, I can remember the fight of that time.
Tell me about that.
I don't think I know enough about it to remember. There was such a controversy there between the Democrats and the Republicans on public utility districts.
Yes, yeah.
And I can't remember too much except there was a controversy. And we were... Right now, I don't remember whether we were for public utility or not.
You know, you mentioned there was this conflict between Democrats and Republicans.
Oh, yes.
So it was a philosophical thing. Tell me a little bit about, you became the Democratic chairman in 1956. What was it about the Democratic Party philosophy that attracted you? Why did you become a Democrat?
That's a very good question. Now I'll tell you why I became a Democrat. It's a long story.
Good. Tell us.
Okay. I was born on the farm, got my grade school education at a country school, went to high school in Medicine Lake and Antelope. In 1926, I graduated from high school, got a job in reserve, working in a hardware store, delivering gasoline for the Community Oil Company. Community Oil Company was a cooperative effort, and we were greatly imbued with the cooperative effort. I had no political feelings at that time. I'll tell you what, the Republicans had a meeting in the hardware store. There were about seven of us there. And I came just with Mr. Holsey was a Republican. And they nominated me and a fellow out in the reservation to go to be the delegate to the convention in Plentywood. Well, I didn't want to vote for myself, so I voted for the opposition. He won by one vote. And I always make fun of that. I came to a near tragedy at that time.
But one vote had gone the other way, you might have been a Republican, huh?
I don't know.
You know, Mags, you probably wouldn't have much of a recollection of this. You'd have just been a teenager, but there was a battle royal for governor in 1924. Governor Joe Dixon was a progressive Republican, and that was probably when you were still a high school student. Do you have any recollection of Dixon or any of that?
No.
Here in
no,
politics?
At that time I was not interested in politics. In 24, I was still in high school. But you asked me why I came to be a Democrat.
Yeah.
Well, how old are you?
57.
Oh, you're a kid. You didn't hit the Depression.
No.
But you know, there's this book, Red Flag Taylor.
Yeah, and of course I want to know about that too, and that's
later,
part of what I think.
Later on, yeah. But anyway, I got the sum total of $75 a month working for the implement, and I wasn't complaining. I was tickled pink to have a job. I had worked for a farmer two and a half a day. I just accepted hard times. And then there was this fight between the Taylor group and the Main Streeters, as he called them. I wasn't involved in that even at that time. I was just a young fellow.
Now, the Taylor group represented who?
Charlie Taylor.
But who did the, who, what would, how would
different,
it?
Depending on who's in power.
Okay.
If the Republicans were in power, he'd be a Republican. If the farmer laborer were in power, he'd be a farmer laborer. He wound up being a farmer labor man.
But describe Charlie Taylor then. He was a radical?
That takes a book to describe him. I want to tell you why I became a Democrat. Anyway, I got this job in reserve at $75 a month. I had free room, but I had to pay $30 for food, so I didn't. I spent most of it for something. A dime here and a dime there. By the end of the month, it was all gone. Anyway, I worked there for a year and a half. He said, "Well, gee, this is no future. This is about 29. So I went back. Said, "Listen, my brother was a Dillon. I'm going to go to Dillon and get a job as a teacher." So I went to Dillon, and 31 I graduated and got my diploma from Dillon. Well, it wasn't easy to get a job, but I got a job in Antelope for $125 a month.
Teaching job?
Yes, and coaching.
At the high school?
Coaching grades and high school. More teaching grades and coaching high school.
What did you teach? Just the general grades?
General, yeah, everything.
Okay.
I taught everything in this, to be taught to the 7th and 8th graders. Okay. So, times were tough and the farmers couldn't pay their taxes. my salary went from $125 to $100. The next year it went down to $90. The superintendent was started out at $2,000. He went on to $1,400 for a year's work. We both said, let's quit. I need to get my degree. So I might as well go to school and get my degree. I had $400. I saved $400. So I went to Missoula, started in the summer, and started taking my degree. And three summers in a regular year, I got my degree. At $90 a month, I said, I might as well go to school and spend my time going to school. And I did. Well, this was back in 1932, 34. So.
Did you know Mike Mansfield at the University of Montana then?
I saw him. He's a teacher.
Yeah. I think he was a graduate student and maybe a teacher then when you were there in 1932.
Yes, he was an individual you could see. I didn't have any classes with him, but I knew who he was. But he wasn't necessarily my idol at the time. But I knew about him. Anyway, so I taught school.
Did you came back here to teach school?
In Antelope.
Came back to Antelope.
For three years, yeah. Then I got the degree, went to Belfry. Taught 2 years in Belfry High School. I think I got 140. I offered a job in south of Missoula, that big town down there, in the Bitterroot Valley.
Hamilton.
And he said, I'll give you $90. And $90, I can't eat the $90, I can't live on it. Well, we had beautiful scenery. I said, I can't eat it. So I took the job at Belfry for $140. I was there for 2 years, and then I built me a service station at Cook City. Because I do for teachers, spend the summer up there in Cook City and teach in the wintertime. Lo and behold, a vacancy occurred at Outlook, and they gave me the job. Let me tell you a story. This happened in the daytime, but it was night before I got through. And I, on my way back to Cook City, it was dark. And I drove between Forsyth and Milestone, and I got sleepy. So I turned off the road and took a nap. When I woke up, you know, which way do I go? I didn't know whether I was going to go this way or that way. You know? So, well, geez, clear. I used to watch the North Star when I was a kid. So I'll find the North Star. So I went out and found the Dipper and the North Star, and it set me off back to Cook City. Anyway. Getting back to, then I got my job at Outlook, and it was tough being a superintendent in northeastern Montana. Fine teachers. We had a gymnasium. Oh, they were great basketball fans at Outlook. And we got a new gymnasium, and if you had a big family, we gave them special rates, you know, just to give them to come to school. All right. I think I wound up at Outlook at $1,800 a year. I went to Freud for a year. And a vacancy happened at Outlook, at the Scobie. So I said, well, gee, that's a pretty good place. So I put on a tie, threw my coat in the car, drove up to Scobie. And I met Mr. Carlsrud, the chairman of the board. And I said, here's the contract. I hope that you can teach us how to beat that Outlook basketball team. So I got the job. I think, $3,000 a year. Anyway, and I hired two teachers. It's much easier to get teachers up there than at Outlook and Freud. Outlook's in the boondocks, just like reserve. In the mood, people weren't very interested in coming unless they needed a job. So anyway, my father-in-law was going out of the livestock business. I said, wait a minute, to my wife. See, I didn't introduce my wife. That's Velma, that's my wife.
Yeah, we did meet, yeah.
So I said, My father-in-law and mother-in-law said, why don't you come down on the farm? Well, that's pretty tough change. But we thought about it. Well, at school, we had two young kids, 2 and 3 years old. We were to live upstairs in an apartment. And I thought, well, gee, now wait a minute. I'd had three jobs in the teaching profession. The thing it was too easy to get that Scobie job. Before I did labor to get a job. Here's my contract. He gave me a contract. But anyway, so that kind of, things are changing. Maybe then it's so good to be a teacher. We're moving from pillar to post all the time, always changing. We don't have a community. A community we can call our own. That kind of settled it right there. There must be better things, so we took over the farm. It was a radical change. I've been in a suit and a tie for 13 years. We didn't think about going to school without a tie on.
About when would this have been, Megs? About 1940 or so?
45, I finished. 44.
So it was during the war.
I got the job at Outlook in 37. I was up there for 7 years. Yes. During the war, yes. We were rationed. I had to take over the coaching job because we lost a coach.
And these years when you were a teacher were the years that influenced you to become a Democrat?
No, not very much so. But I could see the hard times people were having to pay their taxes. Yes, I think that was a thing. If I tell you the struggle between the Democrats and the Republicans, I didn't get involved in that when I was teaching. I had a job. So I didn't see the... Well, I didn't realize how much a man should have being a superintendent, but I liked my teaching work. I did. I liked being with kids. But anyway, there were people who couldn't pay their taxes. The people had kids, and there were at this time there was this fight between the Taylor Group and the other side. If you want me to talk with the Taylor, I can tell you more then. But I didn't even know Taylor. I knew who he was on the streets, but I never talked to him, and I wasn't really concerned about him. But anyway, the times were tough for everybody. So then I moved to Freud for a year, and times were tough down there. And then I went up, got this job, and then is where I became a Democrat. I got into the fight between the laboring man, the farmer, and the people who had... It was kind of a tragic situation. Taylor was mounting his... Oh, he was really a bright man. And he added it in that the laboring man and the farmer were being used. And the other side, the people who were servicing him, the Main Streeters, they called them, they were taking advantage of the farmer. They didn't. The battle became pretty rough at that time. But even then, I went back to farming. It wasn't all that, but I became a farmer's union member. Because you'd get your stuff cheaper at the Farmers Union stores. And the crowd, they're always supporting me. They always supported me. And I supported them. And I didn't like this fight between the rural and the urban. It was pretty bitter. It was pretty bitter. The tragedy is it's still hanging over. Still in there. But here's the thing. Well, I would say Pritner, half of the people were influenced by Charlie Taylor because he was for them. And here they were, and I suppose you had a family of four or five kids, and that was common. They didn't have clothing. They had to go to the doctor. They didn't have food. There's something wrong with the system. And Taylor says we've got to change it. And I came from Norwegian parentage, and then the Myland run of the Norwegians, Scandinavians, they're pretty conservative. They had to work for what they got. So I still felt that we had to work. We couldn't expect. You weren't supposed to get a handout. You're supposed to work for a living. And I had that in the background of my mind all the time. But I always had sympathy for those people. Big families. Maybe they had a garden. What did they do? You know, I went to a convention down to South Dakota. And I don't know what the purpose was, but here I happened to sit next to a stockman. He was a rank Republican, and here I was. I said, "Well, we got to help people out." Oh, he said, "We don't need all these subsidies." I said, "Well, now listen. Suppose you were in Chicago, and you had five or six kids to take care of. You didn't have you didn't have bread and butter on the table. How are you going to take care of those people? Wouldn't let us start? Always, I would take one of the families to my farm. Anyway, the more I saw this thing, I could see the poverty and how people are suffering, and I felt we needed to do something. So, in the election of 32, in 28, the Republicans won, but in 30, the communists started taking a hold a little bit. And, of course, the Main Street didn't worry. There's a union of Republicans and the Democrats. The Democrats who had the common ground. And in 32, we had several communist people on. And
that were elected to office here in Sheridan County.
They were. I don't think anyone got elected. There's one person, I think, the surveyor, got elected. Yeah.
But there were several candidates who ran as communists.
Oh yes. Yeah. Oh, I think they had a full slate.
Now, Megs, were they associated with Charlie Taylor?
Well, associated. They listened to him. He was their savior.
Okay. So he was kind of the leader of that group.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
You see, because we had this communist leaning here in Sheridan County, and we had many economists wonder why it was that way in Sheridan County. One of them said, we wondered if it was the nature of the people that made it that way. I said, wait a minute. In Sheridan County, we've got a lot of Scandinavians, and I'm one of them. I don't like that statement. I challenged that statement, and I think I said, listen, when you have hard times and a man like Charlie Taylor editing a paper.
What was his paper? Was that the Producer's News?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Started in 1917, kind of subsidized by the Nonpartisan League in the early part of the 20th century. And gradually, you know, the Nonpartisan League that felt that institutions of production should be controlled by the people. And they still have a bank because of that.
The Bank of North Dakota.
Yes, yeah, because of that. And I think they had a flour mill. I think they still have a flour mill. But you see, we have a strong Scandinavian population here, in Danes, Norwegians, and Swedes, and a lot of Germans and Irish, but a lot of Germans. They're all, well, they want to be on their own. They didn't like this. The Nonpartisan League got a little bit liberal, and the Non-Responsible League, then the Labor Party came in. And, you know, Charlie Taylor, in 1922 or 24, he ran on the Republican ticket in the Senate and won. And I can just, oh, he won, yes.
So he was, Charlie Taylor was a Republican state senator.
Yes.
I'll be darned. Okay.
Oh, yes. And you can imagine what fun he had with Anaconda Copper.
Oh, I'll bet, yeah.
It was, I mean, he would call it fun anyway. And Anaconda Copper didn't enjoy him very much. But anyway, think about the things. He called people selling groceries, selling lumber. They were Main Streeters. And the people used the Producer's News for advertising because it's the most popular paper. And he did write a pretty good paper, you know? Oh, but he covered world events and everything. Anyway, he made it very clear, if you don't advertise me, I'll make it bad for you. And he did. Very crude. Yeah. Very, very crude.
Did you ever meet him?
No, I just saw him. I never met him. I never did.
You ever hear him speak?
No, I didn't. At the time, I wasn't interested in politics. It just grew on me. But Pasco, the manager of the City Cafe, they got Nels. And he wouldn't, Taylor wouldn't advertise with him. So, Taylor says, the Fuji Grill is full of cockroaches. Well, that wasn't enough. Some itinerant came by and he says, listen, do you want a free meal? Listen, I want you to do this. I've got a dead mouse here. I want you to take that over to the City Cafe and drop it in the soup. And then, and when dropping the staff, hey, we got a mouse in the soup.
Yeah. Taylor put this guy up to this.
Yes. Gave him a free meal, probably. Of course, Pasco knew what was up. He came out of the kitchen with a cleaver and put him on his money. But Pasco was a pretty popular manager. But that's his life. He said, the front page said this. Down the street came Lard, his name is L.S. Olson. On the street yesterday came Lard S. Olson, looking like he was somebody. That was front page stuff.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
In that day and age, that'd really be shocking, wouldn't it?
Of course. Well, here, but this is worse. Polk got to be editor of the opposing paper, and they kind of fought back and forth. This is in the paper. Polk left Mohall, North Dakota, went to Missoula, where he molested four high school girls and got them pregnant. Front page stuff.
And it wasn't true?
No. Well, I don't know. I think maybe it was. It was a rumor.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
But can you?
But it wasn't for sure true.
Huh?
It wasn't certainly true. It might have been true. It was based.
Well,
on
people thought it might be.
I see.
Yeah. Polk was that kind of a guy. But he got by with publicizing it. Can you imagine?
Now, what became of Taylor?
Okay. He had issues or stories from Moscow. What to do? Well, Taylor had a mind of his own, and he sometimes ignored. He was a true, he carried a communist card. He carried it, there's no question about it. But he started disagreeing with them. So about 1932, a new man came on. He didn't last more than a year.
Came on where, at the Producer's News?
Yeah, he ran the Producer's News, yeah. Well, Charlie Taylor went to South Dakota to organize another organization. Well, he stayed there a while. And the Producer's News were going into a place where they couldn't even pay for the newsprint. So Charlie Taylor, they came back, and by 1937, they couldn't even pay for the newsprint, and he retired. From the producer news closed. And he went, got a job in Seattle, worked for Seattle Intensiar or something. Intensiar.
Seattle Post-Intelligence.
Yeah, there you go.
Seattle PI.
Yeah, yeah. And he worked there. He tried to institute, and separately, the Liberal Party, but he didn't get very far in Seattle country. So he died in 67, I believe, somewhere in there. He passed away. And but he stands out as a very powerful man and kind of egotistical. He's one in his issue, one issue of the paper, he said, we have a poll at Sheridan County, and it was voted that Charlie Taylor was the most eminent man in Sheridan County.
And that's what he published in his own paper, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He was brazen.
Now, what happened then, Megs? It sounds like the Main Streeters, whether they were Democrats or Republicans, got together in opposition to Taylor and his group. Is that what happened?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I see.
Oh, yeah.
And they eventually prevailed. So yeah. What then became the Democratic Party that you led? What was that? Was that the remnants of the old Taylor group?
Well, it was very easy for me to get reelected. The Vietnam War beat me. But I didn't campaign properly either. But
when you were elected Democratic Party chairman in 1956...
That's here, not in your county, yeah.
I got you. Here in this county, you were what was the Democratic Party then? When the Democratic Party got together with the Republicans, did it fall away from the Republicans? Did it absorb the Taylor people?
Well, I think it's more word of mouth. We got to get together with you guys rather than anything. Nothing formal, but they just kind of got together, and they had another party too, a Liberty Party or something. I forget who organized that, but that party didn't get very far. But and the Republican Democratic ticket won. I think there was one communist elected. I think it was the surveyor. Otherwise, but you see, about 1924, Rodney Salisbury was a rabid, he was a rabid liberal and a follower of Taylor. And he
was the sheriff.
He became a sheriff, yes. Yes. And he was Polk took after him for padding his bill. You know.
Who took after him?
Polk, the editor of the paper. Yeah. But that didn't matter. Heck, the red group was so strong that the criticisms kind of rolled off the back. You just figured it's all politics. And then we had a robbery at the courthouse. Very well planned. They took $100,000 of the material. Insurance company refused to pay it, but they did eventually pay it. But they figured it was the Taylor group that had done it. But it's questionable. It is questionable. They could never prove anything.
But in your opinion, the Taylor group was right about some things?
Well, it's the way they disagreed kind of didn't set well with the public. You know, it was kind of on the humorous side in their criticism. You kind of felt it was kind of a little bit more than necessary. We got the reputation of being communists. When I went to Dillon's, they said, you're from Sheridan County, you're from the communist country. Well, in the event, I was far from a communist. It didn't bother me to be called there because I knew there were people there. It didn't bother me to say that. But I always say about these people who come up. We had people come for interview me and other people, and I say, why? I says, for simple reason, the times are darn tough, and we had a man who was there championing them. That's the whole simple answer. He was their champion, and he used, well, I don't know, the Holiday Association, it was part of their organization. The farmers who would go to the banks to borrow money to run their farm. They give security a tractor or a cow, a horse, and they couldn't pay, so they put up for auction. We can't lose our equipment. So the farmers got together in the Holly Association. Now don't you guys bid here. If there's a cow for sale, don't bid more than 25 cents for it. Tractor maybe 50 cents. And the banks, of course, couldn't. That didn't help any payments. Ed Ferguson is an auctioneer. I really don't. I think he became Republican. But anyway, he had an auction sale. He wants some more coffee.
No, good. I'm fine.
Huh?
I'm fine.
Yeah, I got here my music, huh?
Well, okay. If you're pouring.
Anyway, there are about five people went to this auction sale, and the federal government says you're obstructing justice, and they serve some time in the jail. But Ferguson turned, or his daughter still lives here. So, but that didn't hold water.
Now, who was Ferguson?
He was an auctioneer.
Oh, okay.
He conducted the sale. People have been 10 cents for a cow and just sold.
Yeah. And so the banks then didn't do much auctioning of things off when they knew that would happen.
Yeah. Well, the farm labor group that they dropped the nonpartisan league. I remember the nonpartisan league. I remember Townley. He was the head of the nonpartisan league. I remember he flew into Medicine Lake way back in about 21. Had never seen an airplane before. We bet at Medicine Lake. He was going to come to Medicine Lake. He said, "Here he comes." So I saw my first airplane, and Townley spoke. But that was about 20. Townley lost his power. He gradually lost out. But he's quite a professional leader. Anyway,
so you developed these feelings about how we need to do something to take care of the poor people, and that helped to make you
I would say so, yes.
To become a Democrat.
Something. Well, here.
What was your thought about what should be done?
I don't know if I had a thought about that. But you see here, people put their monies in the bank. It's hard-earned money, the banks go broke. That was one thing. I never lost any money in the bank. In fact, a banker even borrowed $200 from me one time because I need some money. But we take our produce to town, butter or eggs or cream. It is a tough goal. I was working on the farm and we bought two quarters of land for $6,500. No, we didn't pay that much. We mortgaged it for $6,500. We put the crop in, didn't harvest a kernel. We couldn't pay for the land. Had to give it up. That was in 37. 31 was a bad year. But the thing was, if you raise a crop, you couldn't get anything for it. People, there were the dry years, the people couldn't feed their cattle, didn't have hay. They had to cut thistles and feed them thistles. They shipped some in, but that was too expensive. So they lost their cow herds, lost their milk, lost their cows. Times were so tough that the government started paying, I think, 75 cents per calf. Those things. You go to the doctor, they charge you a dollar. That's his fee, $1. You bring a pound of butter into town, you get 10 cents for it. 10 cents for a dozen eggs. But we made enough to keep going, and we had in the 20s and 30s, we had pigs, we had chickens, and we had cattle. So we had meat. I never went hungry in all my life. I always had something to eat. But I could see other people weren't getting it, weren't getting that. And I thought, well, gee, there's got to be a change.
What was your idea for what the change should be?
I don't think I knew. We had to get more income for the laboring man. Had to get more income for the farm, for the man who had produce to sell. It just seemed like, what the heck's the matter? It was a tough go. It was just a tough go.
Megs, did you support Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal and some of his programs to help with these
lines?
Things?
Absolutely. I don't know what would have happened if we hadn't gotten his in. Even before Roosevelt, I didn't tell you about the feeling on Main Street. It was so intense that they'd have parades and they'd break a window once in a while, you know, the store window. And it got so bad that the storekeeper would have a gun in his handy. And one fellow organized the top of the library, a man with a special gun in case it got rough. And the city dad said, well, we'll turn the hoses on them if they get too bad.
That was here in Plentywood?
Plentywood. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. So.
And that would have been in the 30s?
Yeah.
Early 30s?
Oh, yeah, 30s, 30s. Yeah. In 37 was a poor, very poor crop. God. They had nothing. 31 was bad. But in 35, you had something, but nothing. You didn't get any money for it. You didn't get anything for it. Now, let's see. So why did I turn Democrat? Well, there was only one way to go. If you're going to go into politics, you had to be a Democrat. I had no problem going in. But I made one big mistake. There were four guys down Billings. They just gave us a bad time. Just continually a bad time. And I said, the Republicans, I'm so very sorry for saying the Republicans there. I had to say, there are good Republicans too that have their feet on the floor. But I made that statement. Republican, you shouldn't do that. We were mad. We were really hated what was mad.
This is in 59.
Yep.
You got to the legislature and you felt that these four Republicans who knew the rules apparently pretty well deliberately tied things in knots and that they were unfair in their maneuvering.
Yeah.
And so that made you feel especially strong about being a Democrat.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, well.
And so then in 1961, you came back in the minority.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts about that? How did the Republicans behave when they were in the majority?
Well, I think that was the year they were trying to take the...
Nutter was governor.
Huh?
Nutter was governor.
Yeah. They were trying to take the money. The Hale Insurance Board had some money, and they wanted to take that couple million dollars. And I raised my had to defend the farmer, so I raised quite a little. I got publicity from raising Cain, but take it. Bardno, you know Bardno?
Yes, I do.
He says you ought to read the Ten Commandments to the people. So I read the Ten Commandments. I came to the Thou Shalt Not Steal. I don't know. But anyway, they didn't take Hale board. It was a fight of that was the big fight in supporting the school. How are you going to support the school? Still fighting that way.
What do you remember about Nutter?
Well, he was an aggressive individual. I would say a man on the ball. I never had any criticism of him, only the fact that he was the opposition party. Otherwise, as a man, I think he was a pretty good fellow, you know. Yeah, a lot of people thought so too.
Did you ever meet him?
Oh yeah, no, not really. Not very. I was a little greenhorn. I didn't want to meet people. I met him. I went to his funeral. Made me mad.
Now, do you remember Jerome Anderson? I think he was the majority leader in '61.
Madison?
Anderson.
Oh, Jerry
Anderson.
Not in 61, he wasn't the majority leader then.
I think so.
In 61. Republicans,
yeah, Hawks was the speaker.
Huh?
Hawks was the speaker, and Anderson was the majority leader. I think McDonald was the speaker.
Yeah, but in 61, the Republicans were in charge.
That's right, yeah.
Well, how could Anderson be in there?
Well, Jerome Anderson.
Oh, Jerry Anderson. Okay.
Yeah.
What about him?
Just wanted to know if you had any impressions of him or recollections of him.
Well, he was a good leader, there's no doubt about it. Man to man, I'd say he was one of the better ones, you know. Yeah. But you want to be careful about saying anything good about the opposition. Well, I changed my mind.
Now, I thought I remembered that Ted Schwinden was he might have been the minority leader in 61.
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah, okay. You do remember that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know? I don't know. See, Tom Judge sat next to me. I could never figure out why Ted could beat him.
Why do you say that?
Well, when Ted got home, he made a public statement. Taxes are good.
Ted Schwinden went home after the 61 session and told the people that.
Before he ran for governor.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But I don't know, he had a way about him that people liked.
You thought that the Judge perhaps had a brighter future than Schwinden?
No. We knew Judge was a politician. We knew he was striving for the time ago. He was always up on the floor and doing a good job. And he and I got along good. But we knew. they got a bill introduced. The cats should have to be tied up or had to be housed. And I think Tom Judge approved one of the signers. And some of the Democrats said, "Hey, we'll have fun with him." So who said Tom Judge was supporting the cat house? But he got by all right anyway. His mother was a good politician too, and she's subscribed to me. But he had the way about him. the people liked. He wasn't offensive, except once. I was on the ad hoc committee to try to eliminate some branch of the university system. And we were talking about the mines. Was it necessary to have the mines? And there were about 40 or 30 of us on that ad hoc committee. And he went to Whitehall and made a speech.
Who did?
Tom Judge, okay. As governor. And he says, they will not close the mines across or my dead body. Well, here he appointed us to, we had no intention of closing the mines. I don't think we had any intention of closing any of them.
This ad hoc committee you were a member of was after you had been in the legislature, right? Or was it while you were a legislator?
I was in the legislature.
Oh, I see, okay.
Yeah, about the last session.
So it had to have been before Tom Judge was governor then?
No, he was governor. He appointed me on the ad hoc committee.
But he didn't become governor until 72.
Didn't he?
No. And you left the legislature in 66, right?
Hmm?
You left the legislature in 66.
It'd be 67, wouldn't it?
Yeah, okay. That could be, yeah.
And he was not governor in 67? No, because a Republican governor
then.
So, well, then I was not in the legislature then, or was I running for the legislature maybe for that election, got beat. But anyway...
Anyway, he promised not to close the mine.
Yes, across his dead body.
Speaking of mining, you know, the Anaconda Company had a lot of influence in the politics of this state. At least that's what we read back in the 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s. What did you notice about that when you first arrived in the legislature?
Well, you know, they had a good man there. I forget his name. You know, somebody...
Billy Ray?
Huh?
Billy Ray?
No.
Lloyd Crippen?
No, he didn't be a part. He wasn't active. I knew the name. I didn't know. Oh.
Al Wilkinson?
Huh?
Al Wilkinson?
No. He was one of the top.
Denny Shea?
No. Top power. Anyway, I can always hear him. All of you folks are invited down to a dinner party now in honor of such a birthday, and the Anaconda Company's putting it on. Well.
Was he a legislator, this person?
No.
He's a lobbyist.
Just a lobbyist, yeah. He's a good lobbyist, good fellow, nice fellow and everything. All lobbyists are pretty good that way. But he'd say, oh, come on, we're going to have a party tonight. I'll go to your party, but I'll vote like a damn please. But you know, one thing that bothered me a lot, there was a bill that a rank and file cattleman could not test a cow for pregnancy. It was a rank and file bill of the veterinarians. And I said, well, that thing doesn't have a chance. Nobody's going to do that. What the heck does that make? Nobody. But they had a lobbyist. Oh, what the heck was his name? He said, oh, that's insanitary for anybody to go out and test the pregnancy of cows. And I said, oh, I want to. One of the big ranches down the southeastern part. Big rancher. I said, listen, we can't vote for that thing. That isn't any good. Oh, yes, we got it. I said, what? You want that bill? Well, this lobbyist convinced me that the rank and file wouldn't have any business messing in the red end of a cow. And so I found out. The veterinary head says, I'll tell you what happened. We had a meeting of veterinarians. And they said, let's get a bill in the legislature that makes it illegal for any Tom, Dick, and Harry to pregnancy test a cow. Oh, the veterinarian rank and file veterinarian said, that'll never go through. Well, he says, let's spend $3,500 on a lobbyist and try it. So they did. And the lobbyist got
the bill passed for him, huh?
Huh?
The lobbyist got it passed for them.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Going through.
Yeah. Yeah.
For $3,500.
Do you remember ever having someone from the Montana Power Company or the Anaconda Company talk to you about a bill or anything like that?
No, I was never. I think they realized that I was beyond hope.
Did you ever work with lobbyists for the Farmers Union or the FMLCIA?
Oh, they were always talking to me. The people at People's Voice.
Harry Billings,
yes. We were just like that. Sometimes he was wrong, but most of the time we did.
Who were some of the labor lobbyists?
The labor lobbyists?
Yeah.
Tell you the truth about it, I can't tell you.
Farmers Union?
Oh, yes, definitely, sure. But
who was representing the Farmers Union then?
Well, you never know. From the Triangle area.
Clyde Jarvis? Was Clyde Jarvis?
Yeah, he was in there. I remember him, yeah. He was pretty strong, but I don't remember him as a lobbyist.
Did Harry Billings write editorials and things that would have supported the Farmers Union point of view?
What is that?
Did Harry Billings write editorials that would have supported the Farmers Union point of view?
Oh, definitely. You know, he was definitely liberal. The People's Voice, and you know, the Republicans were sneaking paper and look at it. They didn't want to be seen reading that People's Voice. But you know, that's logical. They should see what they have to say about what.
Sure.
You know, it was logical, but it's kind of humorous. Humorous. But
did you ever go ahead?
The members from the REA. Oh, there were so many people who would talk to the.
The Rural Electric Co-op.
Yeah, they were, all those people, they felt, well, I was for them. You know, I was for them. So they wouldn't pressure me. One gal, she was Republican. And the Republican wanted something with the cattlemen wanted. And she came over to me and she wanted to tell me how she was a Norwegian extraction. And I was so disgusted with her coming around trying to. I didn't vote for their issue.
She tried to persuade you by telling you that she was your fellow Norwegian.
Right? Yes, that's the whole thing. That was it, yep.
Mags, did you ever meet Governor Babcock?
Oh, yes.
What were your impressions of Babcock?
Well, the politics were going pretty strong. Our criticism of one another was pretty serious. And, he was quite conservative. I think his wife was more liberal than he was. Babcock and I just didn't agree.
You remember the race for governor between Babcock and Roland Rennie?
Oh, you bet.
What do you remember about that?
Well, Rennie didn't know how to run a campaign.
Now, he was the Montana State University president.
Mm-hmm.
Out of Bozeman.
Yeah. Was it Babcock he ran against?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well... He was a good, progressive individual, and I don't know, he's pretty careful with his money, pretty careful how he spent his money. It was under his administration they built that dome at Bozeman. The only criticism I had, it should have been bigger so they could have played football in it.
Now, Megs, you went on then after you left the legislature and you were elected to the Constitutional Convention
mm-hmm.
in 1972,
mm-hmm.
which is a significant honor. I mean, only 100 people in the history of Montana after the 1889 Constitution have had that experience. What any impressions or any thoughts about your involvement with the Constitutional Convention?
Yes, my impression was this. The members of the Constitutional Convention felt the legislature was a non-entity. They had no time for the legislature. They thought they were just hopeless. They just... And another thing, the Constitutional Convention would have nothing to do with lobbyists. I said, wait a minute. After all, an industry is entitled to have somebody tell us what is good or bad. And if we can't sift the good from the bad, we don't belong to be here, you know. So I felt very antagonistic, or not very, but I felt that was a very poor policy.
Were the lobbyists told that they weren't, or the industry people were told they weren't?
They were barred. They didn't come in there at all. Yeah, they were barred. Yes, yes. No lobbyists were allowed. Yeah.
So were they in Helena? Did you talk to people that maybe worked for the railroad or the school teachers or the banks or the auto dealers, or were they around at all?
The only one I remember was a practicing attorney. When he realized we were changing, he said, "What the hell are you guys doing that for? Now we're going to have to work. We have to learn a whole bunch of new laws."
But you had committees.
How's that?
You had committees like the legislature. The Constitutional Convention had committees, didn't it?
Not political.
No, I know, but you served on a committee, didn't you?
Yeah, legislative
committee. And so, did people come before your committee to testify?
Oh, sure. Oh yes.
But they weren't lobbyists.
Not very much. They're not much of that. No.
Were there any members of the Constitutional Convention that stand out in your memory?
Oh yes, there are a lot of them. You see, a gal from Bozeman, or from Great Falls, or Reichert.
Arlen Reichert.
Reichert.
Yeah.
She wanted the unicameral. I said, sure, let's try it. I said, listen, let's put it in there on a six-year trial basis and see how it goes. So she went for that, but it didn't go. That didn't go. I said, let's try it and see how it goes. The people weren't going. And then, of course, we had a man from Billings. He's all running for office.
Bob Kelleher.
Yes. He was in my committee. He hardly ever came to the committee. He was out. He was going up to Canada to try about how the parliamentary system worked.
Yeah.
He was bound and determined we should have the parliamentary system. Yeah. people aren't ready for a change.
Well, Bob Kelleher even ran for president, I think.
I believe he did.
Trying to bring about a parliament nationally.
Where does he get his money?
I think he's pretty much retired as a lawyer now.
Is he? Yeah. So, I kind of gave him a boost for the parliamentary system. I said, well, let's try it out and see, but of course it didn't go. So he kind of appreciated the fact that I helped him out. But you don't change people.
Yeah.
Pretty hard to.
Do you think the Constitution was a good change from the old Constitution?
Well, I went there with one thing in mind. I felt the levying of taxes on property was too political. If you were a friend of the assessor, your property wasn't the less property. And the laws in Montana, they helped the counties that show the lower assessed valuations. The valuations were down. So it was some counties were deliberately keeping their tax levies down. So I said, we got to make the assessments on a statewide level. And I never had so much bashing in all my life as that day when I came. That thing passed.
Now what passed?
Assessment of properties on a state level.
Okay, so when the county assessors became employees of the state government.
Yeah.
And that was your proposal.
I was with it.
Yeah.
I worked out of Tony Hill. Yeah. I got more darn boy. I can't. The only thing I ever caught hell for. And I said, listen, if it's so bad, we had in the Constitution that that we should meet every year.
Yeah.
This is a big business. We should meet every year.
The legislature should meet every year.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was the first thing that people kicked out.
Yeah, that's right. They got rid of it two years later. Yeah.
The people as a whole don't like the legislature.
Yeah, I think that's true.
But I said, listen, you eliminated our proposition to have the legislature meet every year. You vote that out. You vote that out right away. If this is so bad, why don't we vote this out? I said, it must be a pretty good thing because it stays in.
Yeah.
You know.
The fact that the assessors work for the state.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other memories of the Constitutional Convention?
Oh, yeah. Well, but I ran for the speakership. I didn't want it pretty bad.
Grayville was the speaker.
Yeah. He was boy, and I didn't do it, but he manipulated one section and got the force. But I say he was a good man. He did a good job. He and I walked down, talked things over. I had no qualms. I had no great desire to be speaker. It was a hell of a job.
Yeah.
Of a job, and I felt he was more qualified, and he did a good job. But I had this thing that they did not believe that bar lobbyists had any business in the legislature. They certainly do. We got to allow them. Why shouldn't they? But they couldn't get their other system, and the rank and file of the rank and file. Those who'd been in the legislature didn't feel that way, but they. They felt the legislature was a non-entity. It wasn't necessary. Yeah. And I said, well, after all, that's the representative of the people. Their disagreements, they're different. There are differences of desires, of needs, and everything. There's got to be differences. It's going to be hard to settle them. But they, you know, Congress is just not the rank and file. Congress is just a non-entity. But my representative is okay.
Yeah, that's how a lot of people think, I think.
Yeah. That's right. But the overall picture of the legislature, the Congress, the legislature make laws. The legislature didn't do, but we allowed wolves come back to eat our livestock.
Does that seem strange to you that we would allow wolves to come back to?
Absolutely, I couldn't have figured it out.
Yeah.
But there's that group of who?
Environmentalists.
Yeah, and environmentalists.
Were there a lot of environmentalists at the Constitutional Convention?
I didn't notice them.
Okay.
No, I didn't notice them. But you know, yes, you asked me how
fast. 5, that's supper time.
You go ahead. I'll
We'll be done here in about 6 or 7 minutes.
Oh, well, not 20 minutes. I don't have to go yet.
Goodbye.
I don't have to go. It's 20
you
minutes.
You go ahead.
It's 20 minutes. I don't want to go that early.
What's that?
It's 20 minutes till 5. I don't have to go that early.
No.
We'll be done here just in 5 or 10 minutes.
Oh, no.
So anyway, we're talking just... I guess finishing our conversation about the Constitutional Convention.
Yeah, I think the members of the Constitutional Convention, they had a very respectable position, and I don't know the problems of the changes. I didn't.
Did you support the Constitution when it went up to the?
Oh yes, I support, but I didn't. I really didn't think they'd pass. And I think Grayville was responsible for getting it through because they were lenient toward gambling. I think that's what made it possible.
Yeah, because it got a big vote out of Butte and Anaconda, perhaps because it didn't prohibit gambling.
Oh, sure.
Looking back, what do you think? Do you think it's been a good document?
I can't. I don't know. I haven't seen anything bad about it. I think that I'd like to have seen that the legislature should have met every year. I felt that was possible. I was very happy to see that the assessors got the statewide visit.
Yeah.
For the job. Yeah, I was kind of surprised that the thing passed, and the only thing that I said was about meeting every year and having the assessors there. I was concerned about that. I felt that would be been okay.
Why were you surprised that it passed?
Because people don't like change.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and it was a big change, of course.
Oh, very, yeah.
Megs, I told you on the telephone I'd probably ask you, you said you had wanted me to ask you about Senator Mansfield.
You see my picture up there?
Oh, yes, I do, yeah. Well, share with me your thoughts about Mansfield.
Well, I would say Mansfield was a diamond in the rough. And Maureen polished it.
And the picture, of course, is a picture of the statue of Mike and Maureen Mansfield here on your wall.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And I made that. I mean, yeah, that's at the University of Montana.
Yeah.
And he made it, when I told him I want to make a statue, he said, well, I want you to put Maureen as being a part of my... She was entitled to, and I think she told him. He was a young man, and he worked in the mines. I wonder how many fist fights he got into. You know, I never asked him that.
Did you have personal visits with him? Did you know him personally?
Oh yeah, sure. I said, what do you want on this statue? So what shall we say on it? So we got something. What to see on it, below the statue? You know. So well, fine. And he wanted Maureen with me on that statue.
Yeah.
He wanted that.
Yeah.
And I think I never heard Mike Mansfield say a derogatory word about anybody. Never word.
Yeah.
The only thing that the McCarty era, they tried to make a communist out of him. That was a close call. They just about to. But he had a terrific ability. You know, here he was, the longest leader of the Senate. He opposed JFK, he opposed Lyndon Johnson about the war in Nixon, Vietnam. He fought with them personally.
Yeah.
We can't send any more people, or they can't lose any more people. And then he goes out on the Senate floor and says, we've got to do this and that. We've got to keep on. You know, that takes a pretty strong man to do that. He says, I'm the majority floor leader. I'm the head man. I got to do what the people are saying.
Did you agree with him on the Vietnam War?
I certainly did. I hate that Vietnam War. It was the most ridiculous war of all.
And you felt that that was a factor in your defeat for the legislature, is that right?
Yes. Oh, definitely. Oh, sure. It was a landslide for the Republican Party. Oh, yeah. I didn't go out and tell them what I had done in the legislature. That was my mistake.
That was 1966.
Yeah.
The election of 1966. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you felt because you were known to oppose the Vietnam War that probably contributed to your defeat in 1966.
No, because I was a Democrat. And the Democrats were the ones responsible for the war. Nixon followed up and took care of it. But it was the Democrats who started that war. They kept it going for a long time.
I see.
Lyndon Johnson, one of our better presidents, but he made a boo-boo too. It's got to be my way or no way, you know.
Yeah.
He was not a good man. So, oh.
Mags, we've got just a couple of minutes left. Is there anything you'd like to say in conclusion?
Well, I what are you going to do with this work now?
This will be as a part of the state's archives at the library, the Mansfield Library.
The Mansfield Library. Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah, I didn't get that. In Helena?
In Missoula, at the university.
Well, at the university. You see, there's a... In Billings, they have a Mansfield Center. And I got a picture, my picture down there too. And I have this statue is at the university campus. A beautiful. They gave it a beautiful spot. Nice place for. I said the reason I want this statue at the university because I want these young men and young women who go by can see men. I'm not so sure it makes a heck of a difference.
Well, Megs, thank you so much for the interview. It's been
well. I
appreciate your public service very much.
Say, listen. Did you read about Taylor?
I've read a little bit about him, and of course we've talked about him today.
If I were to loan you this, would you send it back to me?
Oh, absolutely. You bet I would.
I think you should have it.
I would love to.
You take it.
Okay, thank you.
It's very interesting.
Thank you so much.